Here at the National Ethanol Conference, I'm speaking with Dr. Wally Tyner with Purdue. And Dr. Tyner has done a lot of work over the last several years on the whole question of indirect land use. So tell me some of the things that you presented on the panel regarding land use as it relates to biofuels.
It's a complicated topic, and that was basically a big part of my theme. But the new thing is that we now have real-world data. So I started off presenting data from USDA, no model, nothing, just data from their database that shows in the last 6 years we've added globally 105 million acres of cropland, most of it in corn, soybeans, rice, rapeseed, and wheat. And so markets work. Basically, is the bottom line. Markets work. In this boom period for ag prices, farmers all over the world have added acres. And so we know that market-mediated change is real. The question is how much of it, to what extent is it biofuels, to what extent is it growing incomes and population all over the world and all kinds of other things? Well, our estimate is that of that 105 million acres added globally, 5.9 million is due to U.S. soybean programs and U.S. corn ethanol programs. And that means 5.6% of that 105 million acres was due to biofuels, if according to our estimates, and the rest was due to some other factors. So, yeah, we have had a lot of land use change, and some of it's been due to biofuels, but the lion's share of it's due to a lot of other things.
Well, you also talked about comparative analysis between different feedstocks, especially corn and soybeans, sugarcane, as far as current feedstocks. And then you also went into cellulosic feedstocks. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, our current estimate, and these numbers probably don't mean anything to anybody, but our current estimate for corn is 0.18 hectares per 1,000 gallons of ethanol. That's about a fifth of what the original Sertinger estimate was. But we've also done estimates for cellulosic feedstocks, as you indicate, and one of the really good pieces of news is corn stover has zero land use change. And so in terms of greenhouse gases, global warming, all of that, it's golden. It has no adverse impacts. Miscanthus is another good one. It has 0.06 hectares per 1,000 gallons, so very low. Because it sequesters carbon as it's growing, and it has very high yields. And switchgrass, interestingly, is 0.15, pretty close to corn, because its yields are low and it doesn't sequester carbon as it's growing like miscanthus does. So we're learning. We haven't in the past done anything on cellulosics. This is our first year to do cellulosics, and we're learning quite a bit about those.
And so how long do you think this debate's going to continue?
Forever.
But you also pointed out with all this stuff that you did, these comparative analysis, especially, this is uncertainty. We're working with uncertainty.
Absolutely. Every economic model is uncertain. Don't let anybody kid you. There's no certain economic model. Federal Reserve Board uses uncertain models every month when they set interest rates, but they have to do it. And Congress has mandated that we look at the impact. Congress says we're going to have a policy that requires things that the market wouldn't require. And given that we're requiring things that market wouldn't require, we have a right to see if doing that is going to improve the environment, to see if doing that is going to have the things that we thought it would have, the effects we thought it would have. So that's what they've required us to do. And so we've made a lot of progress in measuring that, but it's always going to be uncertain. It's always going to be uncertain. The current measurements are, yes, it does do that. Yes, it does reduce greenhouse gases. How much? Still uncertain.
Well, and I know we also talked about the situation in California with the low carbon fuel standard, and they're relying on some of these models that are uncertain. We talked about that on the panel, didn't they? The other guys talked about that. What do you think about that situation at this point?
That's very difficult because the congressional policy is what I call a threshold policy. It's got to reduce it by 20%, or it's got to reduce it by 50%, or by 60%. And then there's even flex, plus or minus 10. So a lot of the uncertainty, if our estimate says that it reduces it by 75% and the standard is 60, probably it's okay. But with the carbon fuel standard, every point of carbon is worth millions of dollars to somebody. And so that uncertainty weighs much more heavily in the CARB procedure than it does in the EPA procedure or the congressional procedure. So I'm comfortable with the level of uncertainty when it comes to the application of the Energy Independence and Security Act. I'm much less comfortable in the CARB situation where you're attributing a number that has to be high precision, needs to be high precision, because every percentage point means dollars. We don't have that level of precision.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Good to see you here at the National Ethanol Conference. I'm Cindy Zimmerman.